You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Brad Kohlberg with a story about a musician and podcast host from Wauwatosa.
Joe Wong was a musical kid growing up in Wauwatosa, where he learned to play a few instruments. But he fell in love with the drums around age 11. Something just clicked with drumming that hadn't quite been there with the other instruments he'd tried.
I can remember the first time I played drums with another musician and how incredible it felt. And in some ways, I feel like I've been chasing that feeling my whole life.
After playing in bands and doing some touring, Wong enrolled at Berklee College of Music in Massachusetts, which seemed like a great idea at the time for someone who wanted to make a career out of music.
But then when I went to the school, it made me question everything and subvert my own voice, and it was a bit overwhelming, so then I kind of retreated to a farmhouse in Wisconsin to try to parse through everything and metabolize the information that I had gotten.
Wong eventually hit the road again with guitarist Marnie Stern. While on tour in New York City, he had a chance meeting with his friend and former Fugazi drummer, Brendan Canty. They grabbed drinks and got into a pretty deep conversation about music and life. And that was the spark for Wong's podcast, The Trap Set, where he talks to other drummers about a variety of topics. Canty was the show's first guest.
That's how it all started. Basically, out of my desire to work through my demons with my musical heroes.
I have a lot of work to do. I have to finish two films, and I have to have a big soundtrack job, and I just had to be working all the time. And it's like when you start drinking at night, you know, you end up spending a lot of time thinking about going out and hanging out with your friends, and it's really great and it's really fun, but you really don't get half the work done you should be.
Right.
So I hate to lay it on you, but
I thought I was feeding the muse the whole time.
I know, right? So did I.
Now, around that same time, Wong was tapped to create original music for the Netflix series Master of None, starring comedian Aziz Ansari. A friend of Wong's, who is one of the show's music directors, reached out to him, so he gave it a shot.
At the time, I was working with a partner who still lives in Milwaukee, Didier LaPlay, and so we made some demos, and Aziz and the other music supervisor, Zach Cowie, were really into what we were doing, and that's how that happened.
And that's led to composing gigs for many other series and comedy specials. And recently, Wong has taken inspiration from all of the creative people around him and channeled it into his debut album, Night Creatures, which was written as Wong's father was dying.
My dad had a massive stroke in 2010, and ultimately he never recovered. And so I saw him lose pieces of his personality over time. And that's basically what the album is about. It's my way of working through that. All things dissolve in
time. As Wong was recording the album at an LA studio, he had a surprise visitor.
I felt somebody behind me, and I turned around, and Cat Stevens was standing there. And he said, "Nice tunes," and that was enough praise to get me through the rest of the day.
Wong says he'd like to write more nice tunes in the future and find a balance between recording albums and his work as a television and film composer.
I've developed this muscle of writing a lot of material from my career as a film and TV composer, so I'm trying to deploy that muscle in service of making another album.
Joe Wong is a drummer and composer, and he hosts the podcast The Trap Set. He's a native of Wauwatosa, Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Brad Kohlberg.
And now PBS Wisconsin is launching its new 9-part digital series today called Why Race Matters. We have its host and creator, Angela Fitzgerald. Angela looked inward after the killing of George Floyd and wondered how she could elevate and center conversations in Wisconsin around racial inequity and racism. Do you seek out interviews or documentaries about race and lived experiences? And what ways does this shape your own experiences around race? Have you had deeper conversations about racism with friends and loved ones? How did they go? It's 800-642-1234. Angela Fitzgerald is host and producer of Wisconsin Life, and her new series is called Why Race Matters. Alongside her work as a PBS Wisconsin host, Angela is director of family, youth, and community engagement for the Madison Metropolitan School District. Angela, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Would you mind sharing how it felt for you and the thought processes you went through after the killing of George Floyd on May 25th?
Sure. I just remember things feeling different. This isn't the first instance of police brutality directed towards Black bodies, but somehow the kind of nationwide response felt different. It felt elevated in an exciting way. And for the first time, I was noticing that brands were coming out with their statements about Black Lives Mattering and how they felt, just making a lot of kind of public statements that hadn't really happened before. Mm-hmm. And it left me wondering, because at the time, PBS Wisconsin hadn't put anything out initially. So at the time, I was wondering, like, what is our stance as a network? And then also wondering, what is my role as someone who works as a media personality for the network to really like highlight that this is an area of concern, not just in these other parts of the nation, but in our own backyard. And so that led to like a series of emails and just pitches. And here we are months later. So it really just for me felt like I needed to do something. And how might I be able to use my existing relationship with PBS Wisconsin to just put something out there that continues the conversation and moves us towards action within our state.
Yeah, I mean, you were proactive here. You felt this need to do something. How did PBS Wisconsin respond?
Oh, they absolutely were super supportive because I didn't really have any preconceived ideas that my thoughts would turn into something, right? It was just like, hey, guys, just wondering what we could do or kind of what the network could do that is a response to what we're seeing happen on a nationwide level. Because this was, unfortunately, before Kenosha, when things did come into our own state backyard, but did want Wisconsiners to not feel absolved of the issues, because sometimes it's easy to say like, oh, things happen over there, but they don't happen over here, even though George Floyd was in our Midwest neighbors, right? I still did not want our state to feel like, oh, well, that's an issue that happens in other places, because we know what the disparities are in Wisconsin. So they were absolutely supportive and willing to talk and kind of flesh out what it could be, because this was also occurring during the time of COVID. So production as we normally would have done it wasn't happening. And so I understood that. I understood the limitations around what we could do safely, but still felt like what might those possibilities be? And it has led us into waters that were uncharted for us. And I'm super excited to hear audience responses to what we've been able to put together and even what could result following the launch of Why Race Matters.
Yeah. And so you interview artists and community organizers and health professionals. And so for all of these conversations and, you know, you're having them outdoors, you're spread out. What were you trying to get at in these conversations?
I was really trying to get at authentic stories of Black people living in the state of Wisconsin who are also doing the work to reduce disparities in whatever their field or area happened to be. It very much to me was kind of a narrowing of the focus that I know we take with Wisconsin Life. Like that's one of the things I absolutely love about my role with Wisconsin Life is I get to travel around and meet interesting people who are doing cool things in the state. And I love having those community conversations. So I wanted to take a similar feel and similar focus and just direct it towards like racial inequities and kind of what does that mean for those who are having this dual role of being impacted, but also doing the work. and celebrating the successes that are resulting from the work that they are seeing taking place.
I want to hear some snippets of this work. And in one of the episodes, you interview marriage and family therapist Myra McNair of Madison about Black mental health and trauma. Let's listen.
The numbers of how many Black people are dying from COVID, just that alone, we were seeing an increase at our clinic for mental health, right? And then after the murder of George Floyd, he said, I can't breathe. We've heard countless Black men say, I can't breathe. And I always explain with COVID and then with all of the racial unrest, we can't breathe as a community.
You know, Myra, as a therapist, I would imagine she carries all the burdens of her community and her clients and patients. How did she process what she was hearing in her counseling sessions?
Well, I absolutely love that within our conversation, she uplifted not only the significant role that she and her practice take to supporting the mental health needs of historically marginalized communities in the state and in Madison, but she also referenced that many of her staff are members of these communities and what are our needs, given that we are being impacted as well. And so she mentioned taking, like, I don't know, remember exactly the length of time, but they basically shut down for at least a day to make sure that staff were okay and to turn inward around addressing the needs of staff. And so I absolutely love that because it was completely relatable. I've talked to other friends and colleagues in the state who have had similar kinds of experiences in the workplace, but feel like when they join the Zoom calls, when they go in meetings, they have to put on the face because there isn't room for them to really reveal how they're feeling, how the additive effect of multiple pandemics is really just draining and depleting them, because there isn't that space created within their professional environment. So the fact that she was intentional about creating that within her practice, I so appreciated. And I hope that others who run businesses are considering, what space are you creating for your staff, especially those who are being impacted by everything that's going on.
How do you think race and inequities compounds that inability to show the true self, to, you know, maybe bear weakness, if you will?
Well, I think it's, well, then that may not be everybody's experience, right? Mm-hmm. But I think for some individuals, it very much is that this is something that internally that I deal with, but it's not a shared experience by others around me. Mm-hmm. And because it's not shared, it's not understood. I do not feel like I have a space that feels safe and where I can not only share, but also feel like maybe I'm able to receive support. And that maybe has played out in different ways for folks in terms of going to work right after maybe an incident has happened nationwide. And then you're personally affected by it, but at work, no one's talking about it. So it feels as though for others, it's business as usual. But for you, you know, you're deeply impacted.
PBS Wisconsin host Angela Fitzgerald with us. A new digital series she has, it's called Why Race Matters. New episodes drop Wednesday evenings at 7. First one premieres tonight. Do you plan on watching it? What topics do you want to cover and go deeper on? What are your thoughts on racial equity in our state? When was the last time you had a conversation, a deep one, with someone about race and representation? How did it go? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Let's go back to our conversation with PBS Wisconsin host and producer Angela Fitzgerald about listening more intently, about going deeper with Wisconsinites on these complex, stark racial disparities and how it feels to be Black or brown and call Wisconsin home. Angela's new interview series, it's called Why Race Matters. First episode in the series drops today. Are you a person of color in Wisconsin? What is your story, your experience like? Still time to share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Angela Fitzgerald is with us for 10 more minutes. Angela, I want to hear another snippet in your series, and you cover Black farming and land ownership. And this is a part of your conversation with the longtime fresh food activist and farmer Robert Pierce.
It was so hard to convince people that what I was doing was the right thing, because it was like they equated it with slavery. They, you know, the hard work, you know, was like, you know, they didn't realize there was a payout for that hard work.
Could you fill in more there? What did he mean about equating farming with slavery?
Sure. So he was just describing people who would observe him or his family working the land. And because of the limited ways in which Black history is shared, especially within our educational system, for many Black people, like, that is their sole exposure to Black people and working the land. It's when we were a part of chattel slavery. But for him, he recognized the value of not only land ownership, but of being able to provide healthy foods to your community and to your family and kind of what that means. So it does complicate the issue of historically how there was a forced nature to working land, but then how that also lent to, over time, limited access to being able to own land and to be able to farm and to personally use the skills that were forced upon you previously during past generations. And so he does unpack kind of all of that while elevating his story and the experiences he's had in Madison as a Black farmer.
And a line that makes me smile from him is, you know, you can buy food for me, but I'd rather teach you how to grow it. What did you discover about his lived experience with food and growing food and the bigger picture of food inequality in Wisconsin?
I loved how he, and I believe he still carries this like marker as someone who owns the only Black-owned farmers market in Madison. And he specifically targets the South Side, which is a community that he used to be a part of, in terms of providing healthy foods to that community. And he mentions in the interview how that was the community where the first McDonald's was like basically erected in Madison, and how that kind of changed the nature of how people were able to access food inexpensively. So now I'm able to get cheap food, but is it quality food? Is it healthy food? Not so much. So he wanted to combat that and to still support like the health of his community by providing it in an inaccessible way within their own backyards. But it also speaks to, again, just the kind of removal that a lot of Black Americans have had from farming, from land ownership, from growing food that we took with us for such a long time. But because of historical barriers and other sorts of challenges, like, that is not as widespread as it has been. Mm-hmm. Though it's exciting to hear about kind of that resurgence taking place in different parts of the country.
Let's bring in Chris now in Racine. Chris, hi. What would you like to say?
Well, I do know that racism is a fact in Wisconsin because I have a coworker last night who made the casual comment, this is as bad as being in a white store and having them follow me around to see whether I'm going to take anything. And we together work on a unit of children that are having mental difficulty, and some of them are from diverse backgrounds, where some are from white supremacists, and I have Black children that have been hurt, and the difficulty in dealing with this population, and some hate me for my color, and I'd say, okay, you must have been hurt by somebody who looks like me. I'm going to try and show you a different way.
Chris, thank you for those reflections. You know, when you looked at this series, Angela, did you look at education and how we handle young people in terms of these difficult conversations?
Absolutely. So one of the interviews we had that was so, so powerful was with Rudy Bankston, and he described his work to disrupt the school-to-prison pipeline, but also his personal journey where he essentially was involved in the school-to-prison pipeline and how that impacted not only his personal life, but the work that he recognizes still needs to happen within our state, because despite the racial makeup of our students in our school districts, they still are overrepresented when it comes to expulsions, when it comes to disciplinary practices. And then what does that mean, right? Like, why are students overrepresented in these negative ways within our school district? And we know how that plays out in terms of life paths, the school to prison pipeline being one of them, where getting in trouble in school heightens your chances of becoming involved in the criminal justice system. And then what does that mean once you're involved in that system? How are you then able to reengage with your community? We know there are problems with reentry, which is another conversation we had with Carmela Glenn around Black female incarceration. So it becomes this cycle, unfortunately, that begins at a very young age. And so it involves the multiple systems being linked in that way. And so how do we recognize where it begins and where best to disrupt the ways these systems negatively impact particularly communities of color?
Let's hear just a bit from restorative justice practitioner Rudy Bankston.
When you know you're a human, you're not going to accept slavery or oppression. And it's similar to today. When we know what we're truly worth, we're not going to accept. So just that education piece became critical, but not a white-centered education.
Rudy, looking at this through the restorative justice lens, how do you heal? How do you heal neighborhoods? How do you heal victims? What steps did he see are here in the future that we can take?
And that's such a complex question, right? Because I think we definitely attend to the individual in terms of their needs. But by just attending to the individual, we're not disrupting the systems that were the ones involved in the harm inflicted on the individual. So we need both, right? We need individual supports and restoration, but then also calling out the systems that created the conditions upon which harm then became possible. And what does it look like for those systems to look completely different than they have all along? Because we do recognize that these systems, many of them, if not all of them, arguably, were not created for the benefit of Black students, were not created for the benefit of Indigenous students, of Latinx students. And so because we recognize that, what should they look like in a way that does create different outcomes for these student groups?
As you take a look at the series now, what do you hope people take away from it? Because I'm sure you had to really pick and choose who you were able to interview.
Yes, it was so tough with COVID making it difficult. We had a great advisory team, though, that helped us in identifying who to interview and the topics to highlight. But we absolutely do want folks to see this as part recognition of the issues, part call to action, as well as celebration of the successes that have taken place under the leadership of those belong to the communities that are impacted. So super excited to hear folks' feedback after viewing the episodes, which will be launching tonight.
Angela, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Angela Fitzgerald is host and producer of Wisconsin Life and new series called Why Race Matters on PBS Wisconsin. We have a link to it at WPR.org/mornings. Just ahead, we talk with a pair of real estate agents as we look into the status of the housing market, find out what buyers and sellers should know. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.